We take this two-dimensional infrastructure that exists on the ground and create three-dimensional on-demand virtual infrastructure, highway infrastructure in the sky. We create these virtual highways in the sky which open and close on demand.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstad takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
Welcome to the Hangar X Studios podcast, and this is where innovators and creators and leaders and everyone who's shaping the future of aerospace comes and shares so we can get the knowledge that we need. And I'm excited today to let everybody know that we are sponsored by Hangar X Daily. You know, think about it, as leaders, actually we've looked out there, there's 800 to 2,000 articles that come out a day across all of aviation, from drones and innovations and VTOLs and technology. And we've actually created an engine over the last 6 months that reads every single article and distills that down into a 5-minute read of what we think you need to know. With our opinion, our entire team is using it and our sponsors, and it's been huge. So we'd love for you to go to hangarxdaily.com and sign up as we launch this, and we want to put this in your hands. There's no cost and it's free. So with that, we have a fantastic episode today with Amit Ganju. Amit, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure being here and chatting with you all.
Well, yeah, and you're the CEO of Anra Technologies. It's one of the most trusted platforms in not only global aerospace, but mission management. And you guys are working with governments and enterprises, innovators and operators to really create safety at scale. We have talked so much. We were talking about this before we rolled, you know, with the different drone companies and BVLOS and VTOLs and in the traditional airspace, managing our air traffic control system, upgrading that, being able to do that autonomously and safely and have all these different layers communicate is absolutely an enabling technology, and that's where you guys live. So today we're going to be, you guys built Anra from this early concept to now you're globally recognized in aerospace management. And everybody out there listening, Anra's technology is currently supporting drone traffic, advanced air mobility, and then also real-time mission orchestration. Now think about what that means. And you guys are at the center, and you guys are experts on regulation and safety and large-scale commercial deployments. So this is going to have to be national and then international. So today we're going to talk about what that actually means and how we take low-altitude airspace and get it to function so that autonomy really starts to become mainstream. So With that, you know, this is an area where there's such innovation and such entrepreneurism happening. And as we were doing our research, I mean, Anra came to the top of our list. So I'm really thankful that you were able to make some time for us and to share with our audience. So when you started this, though, what were some of the, I think, core industry challenges that you or maybe you and your team were seeing that you said, you know what, we need to solve that, and why?
So I used to work with U.S. Department of Defense on drone and communications program. And being a pilot itself, I could see the new... back then, drones weren't a thing in the commercial space, but they were, as you know, drones have existing in the defense world for many decades. So I could see the set of problems that we were encountering in defense use of drones, and as scale happened, how would that translate to the commercial space and what the challenges would be. So back in spring of 2015, I actually hired an intern and we built a prototype and took it to a security event in DC, and guess what, we got the coolest technology award. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. And 2 weeks later, I got a call from the principal technologist at NASA saying, hey, I'm the principal technologist. We would like to sign a collaborative research agreement with you on this thing we call UTM. I'm like, what is that? I've never heard of it. And they said, the concept that you showcase is what we are looking to research. It's what we call, it's the airspace management for uncrewed aircraft or drones or autonomous aircraft. So that's how, in essence, our journey started. So we were one of the first companies to sign the collaborative research agreement with NASA. They had just a few months before that published a research paper on UTM. And you were asking me earlier, were we part of the paper? We were not part of the paper. We came on a parallel track, and it just our paths kind of intersected.
Yeah, and speak to this too, because as been a pilot for, my gosh, 40 years, and the airspace as it exists today is optimized for a small number, highly trained crews. I think you said before, like, there's maybe up to 10,000 people flying globally, but we're about to add tens or hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions globally of unmanned airplane, uncrewed craft, from airplane size down to small drones. And all of a sudden, the problem we're trying to solve is gotten much more complex, and it has to be solved for this to actually now benefit.
Yes. So the way you have to look at it, since you're a pilot, you understand, like, if you're flying in an IFR flight plan, you're in communication with the tower, the controllers and stuff like that. It give or take 10,000 crewed aircraft at any given point in the sky. Now, when you move to the uncrewed world, and now that works because there's a human in the loop, a controller in the loop that is helping you with the separation. Now, when you move to the uncrewed world, hundreds of thousands and millions eventually, that human in the loop paradigm doesn't work. It's not scalable. So you need a more automated, software-driven, AI-based system that is simplifying and doing it in a digital fashion. So that is what, in essence, UTM ended up being, the first form of digital traffic management. And these days, we are talking about the airspace modernization, air traffic modernization in the US and stuff like that. And air traffic modernization, the only way you modernize it is by digitizing it, leaning more towards digital technology. So what we built over the last decade is actually one of the foundational pieces of what we see the future of air traffic management as, a where you have different kind of players, and it's your traditional crewed aircraft, you have eVTOLs, you have drones, and you have, even in some cases, depending on which part of the world you're operating it, you will, because in some parts of the world, there's some level of segregation where drones fly just low altitude airspace, bigger aircraft fly higher. But there are other parts in the world, because the airspace is so dense, you can't really segregate. It has to be integrated airspace. So you need, all of a sudden, you need to have a system that has awareness of everything and able to deconflict strategically and tactically, track all that traffic and still ensure the safety of the national airspace system.
Right. And so before we get to how you do that, if you actually look at airspace management around drones and AAM, it's been evolving very, very quickly. So, over the last 10 years, has there been some pivots that you've had to, either navigate through or innovate through that surprised you?
It's not been, I wouldn't say pivots, because we have always stayed laser focused since day one. So our mission hasn't changed. Our core focus as a company hasn't changed. We have always focused on what we call mission management and airspace management. Those are the two things we do, and we do that very well. The challenge for us was, we were building the infrastructure for a market that didn't exist. So as a funded company, our investors had a hard time understanding what the timeline is. We were essentially telling them, hey, the industry will exist, it's inevitable, and it will require digital traffic management. And the response would be, it sounds interesting, but when will the revenue happen? So that was the challenge we were kind of, because we could see the writing on the wall, but getting, so that was the biggest challenge we faced as a company, because we could see this happening, we see the need for it, but getting the investors on board, because as you understand, aviation is a regulated industry. It's not like any other typical SaaS product we are building, or so we have to kind of line up with the regulation. And aviation moves slowly for a reason, because it has the highest standards of safety in the world. So that's the challenge we had to do. And so we had to use this approach, what I call as innovation, experimentation, and operationalization. First, we innovated. Yeah, we figured out, yes, there's a solution. Now we have to experiment and make sure that this works. And we did that over many, many years. So we are probably the only company out there in the world that has been part of, actually, we are the only company in the world that's been part of all the research projects and campaigns run by NASA. NASA started a project called TCL-1, TCL-2, 3, 4 for drone research, and then FAA started UTM Pilot Project 1, Pilot 2, and then UTM Field Test 1, 2. We've been part of all of those here. And similarly in Europe, in Switzerland, in UK, we were part of equivalent programs. So we went through this experimentation phase. And now eventually, if you fast forward to today, the last 18, 24 months, it's all been about operationalization. So we have now taken the same technology that went through the ringer and went through a bunch of iterations, and we proved that technically we could do this. And now it was the willingness of the regulator to join hands with the industry. I see that you proved how it can be done. Now let's get it operationalization. And then that's how the shared airspace happened. And if you're familiar with initially the FAA Keysight Initiative here and the shared airspace, so I'm the ops committee co-chair as well. So initially it was coalition of the willing, four companies that came together with blessing from FAA and presented that we could actually share the airspace with Zipline, Google Wing, Mana Drone Delivery, DroneUp, all operating in the same airspace. And we were the only non-vertically integrated provider catering to public safety, Arlington Police Department, and Mana Drone Delivery. And come today, like we are supporting thousands of daily flights. We're going from zero official BVLOS flights to thousands of flights, not just in US, internationally as well, with companies such as Matternet, Mana, Amazon, New York Power Authority. They're all customers of ours.
You know, it's interesting. And also, you talk about regulatory. ANRA, you guys were recently, actually the first company. You got the European Union Aviation Safety Agency as a U-space service provider. Could you say about what that meant to you and what that is?
What that meant, it was a very painful 2 years, five day long journey. You are an aviator, so you understand the aircraft we fly are type certified, right? They're like whether you fly a Boeing or an Airbus, they are type certified. And type certified certification is the key in the aviation world. And we wanted to put our money where our mouth was. So we put in a lot because we knew. Because a lot of people think this is a software problem. Hey, you build cool software and the problem goes away. What people miss is this is an aviation problem. Software is a means to an end, it's not the end. So, having that safety mindset, how you ensure safety support assessment and software assurance of a highly critical piece of software, not from a just from a technology point from but from an organizational point of view as well. So this we were the first company that went through the certification, and what we were told it was more stringent than a typical air navigation service provider certification because EASA had never done one, so they had to set a high benchmark. So we got evaluated. We had nine audits, over 27 meetings, 15 multiple day workshops over a 2 year period, and we spend millions of dollars, over tens of thousands of man hour labor, and we came out at the end with the certification. And I'll tell you, going in, we didn't think it would change anything because we were already doing a lot of things. But at the end of it, when we came out at the other end, I can tell you with 100% confidence that we came out as a better company, a safer company with a much more robust mindset that we went in when we went into the certification process. So now we hold the certification as a USSP, which is called a US service supplier, and we can offer these traffic management services across any of the European member states.
And Amit, what does that mean for the operational environment then in Europe now that this has been approved and now we're starting and actually they're doing a lot more BVLOS there than here in the US currently?
It depends on, I wouldn't say it's more or less. The markets are kind of just, it just goes like this. Both sides, one comes up, the other comes up. So I
Okay.
think there's progress happening in both of the worlds. The difference in Europe is the US approach is an incremental approach, a spiral approach. Let's take one service, get it out there, get some data, then we'll add more complexity. In Europe, they certified four core services. So U-Space has four core services and two optional services. So once they certified, so EASA has a certified system. Just like you have a certified aircraft, But someone has to start an airline. There have to be airports to fly. Similarly, we have the certified system. Now, each of the European member states has to complete what's called an airspace risk assessment, and designate an area, geographical area, they call a use space. And then our system would manage the traffic within that use space. So there were some pre-use space trials that have happened, and right now there are operational use spaces getting designated, whether it's in Belgium and Switzerland, and we are offering those services there.
Well, yeah, and as you're implementing that, you're creating some, real-time airspace awareness. So, with your background, how do you balance the innovation of a technologically, entrepreneurial company, but also that need for extreme safety and reliability, especially in a shared airspace? How do you, there, it seems like there's a tension there between those two.
No, it's not. That's what because if you look at, and we have seen companies come and go. Like some people think this is a software problem. I'll build a cool piece of software with like a very fancy UI. It looks great and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, it has to be tied. Aviation, as I mentioned, is a regulated industry and has the higher standards of safety. So everything that the system does has an impact on safety. It has to account for safety from every aspect of it. It has to look at air risk, it has to look at ground risk, route optimization, and all these aspects. So for us, because we are technologists, but we are also aviators, so we understood that. And it was not working in vacuum. One of the key reasons we have been able to accomplish what we did is we focused on real operations, and right from day one, we worked very closely with the regulators, not around them. We worked hand in hand with the regulation. So I happen to be, I have been part of many aviation rulemaking committees in U.S. with the FAA, with the BVLOS Aviation Rulemaking Committee. Right now, I'm on the Cyber Aviation Rulemaking Committee. I'm on the EASA's Rulemaking Committee. So we put in the time and effort to work with the regulators to figure out what is needed and then translate it into technology versus doing it in vacuum. And then I always talk in terms of three pillars, because you have technology, you have regulations, and you have standards. For this industry to move forward, you have to be at the intersection of this Venn diagram, because you can build the coolest technology, as I mentioned, but if it doesn't line up with the regulations, you have nowhere to go. You have no business case. And then you want to build the technology for a company like ours. If I build the technology that only works in US and does not work in Europe, does not work in Africa, does not work in Asia, it defeats the business model. It's not a scalable business model. So having standards which are interoperable and allow us to build an interoperable system is key. So some of the only known published standards for this industry have come out of ASTM and EuroK. And I chaired the co-chaired the ASTM standards body that published the interoperability standard. And if you were to compare this, the need for interoperability, and use an analogy that most people would relate to, if you look at a cell phone, and if you picked up a cell phone 15, 20 years back, and in US, and you went to Europe or Japan, the phone stopped working because you had different technologies. You had CDMA, GSM, and other technologies. Eventually, one standard, 3GPP1, and GSM became the de facto standard. And then from GSM, we went to 4G, LTE, 5G. And right now, it doesn't matter. I can pick up a phone from anywhere, it'll work anywhere, because we have the same interoperable standard. And that's what I had. In my previous life, I used to work in came from the communications world. So I had seen this happen once. So we intentionally put in the effort this go around to build a system that right from the ground up was interoperable and lined up with the regulation and the technology side. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and do this because, and maybe even tell some stories about some of the, customers, commercial use cases you have. But what is ANRA and how does it work? Like, a practical explanation. I think that'd be fascinating for everybody.
The simplest example, I'll use an analogy, and then I'll say how our customers use it, right? Today, people are used to getting in a car and going from point A to point B. And the way you get from point A to point B, you have roads, you have intersections, you have signals where you stop, you have stop signs. So there are rules of the road. What we do, we take this two-dimensional infrastructure that exists on the ground and create three-dimensional on-demand virtual infrastructure, highway infrastructure in the sky. We create these virtual highways in the sky which open and close on demand. So a drone from Amazon doesn't go, bump into a drone flying from New York Power Authority doing a power line inspection, or a police department drone, or stuff like that. So, or it doesn't go bumping into airliners and those kind of things. So it strategically deconflicts them, and then tactically try that. So once we create these virtual highways in the sky, as the drones fly, we track them for conformance to those virtual highways. And if they're not conforming, we would dynamically notify others. So let's say we had a flyaway drone. It would notify the others and reconfigure the other highways so the air traffic stays safe. So basically think Star Wars, and people sometimes laugh, hey, you're using Star Wars as an analogy. So that's happening. And right now we're doing that with smaller drones, but eventually eVTOLs come into the same mix as well, because smaller drones typically fly below 400 feet, but eVTOLs will start small and climb up higher, up to 1200 feet where manned aircraft are. So all of a sudden we have to maintain separation with that traffic as well. So that's the simplest way I can explain what we do. Now, from a software point of view, there's a lot of complexity that happens behind the scenes to make all this work. But virtual highways in the sky, on demand, they open, close. So if an aircraft went through, that highway closes and someone else can go in another direction and use that piece of airspace for their route a few seconds later.
Okay, so you're creating this three-dimensional highway system. And yeah, I think the
we call it four-dimensional because it's in space and time, because it's, okay, each thing is split in time segments.
So then how
each of those volumes has a start and end time.
Okay, start and end time. Now, how do you take this infrastructure that you've created and communicate that to the drone operator or the command center that might be operating, you know, one person operating multiple drones because they're flying autonomously?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's basically automated. Most of our customers do automated flights. There is, when you say one-to-many or one-to-one, the sheer definition of an autonomous flight is you're not flying, you're just tracking it in essence. You press a button and you're just monitoring it. So what happens once in pre-flight, in the strategic phase, when you're doing a flight planning, you file a flight plan and our system would create a deconflicted route for you. And there may be one flight, there may be hundreds of flights. So we create strategically all deconflicted routes, these virtual highways. And so let's say an aircraft is going from point A to point B, and another one is going C to D, and they are technically, they're at the same space, in the same space, but they're temporally split out, so time-wise. So when this aircraft passes, the other one crisscrosses. So the system does all that strategic deconfliction. And once the drones are flying, so to answer your question, the integration into the ground control station or the operation center, all we need initially is the flight plan. Once we are part of the flight planning process, we would create the deconflicted route. And as the drones are flying, we would track the telemetry, basically GPS location, and make sure the aircraft is staying in that virtual highway we created for them from a conformance point of view. So we get a feed from the drone via the GCS or directly from the drone over the cloud or the internet into our system for tracking purposes as well.
And what happens if there's a change? Let's say, you know, some knucklehead like me flies down too low, or, you know, I'm getting my helicopter rating and I fly into an area where, you know, it was a safe drone corridor, but now there's an aircraft there. What happens to the dynamicness of that environment?
That is a brilliant question. So again,
well, thank you.
technically, the system has the sophistication and the capability to pull in all kinds of cooperative traffic and even non-cooperative traffic, because you used your example, but there may be a non-cooperative drone flying too. So as long as we have input sources, whether it's coming from a sensor or a cooperative feed like ADS-B, the sensor can use that for situational awareness of the operator and recommend alternate courses of action. Then eventually it's up to the operator PIC, think of it, the RPIC's decision, what they want to do. It's eventually, we don't automatically change the drone and command the drone to fly elsewhere. That is the RPIC's decision technically, right? But we can provide advisory to the pilot, hey, this is happening. Why don't you do something different? and it depends on what we are tracking. The initial shared
And will it
airspace
give them a
operations time.
recommendation? Let's just say I'm controlling 20 drones and I get an alert that says, hey, you know, drone number six has got a problem. So now I need to look at it. And are you showing like a recommended like reroute, like a GPS would do?
It depends. So I can talk to our capability. I'm not going to talk to what others provide,
Okay,
but we
fair.
have the sophisticated capability that we can provide that guidance to the operator, and then operator can decide if they want to use what we recommend or if they have an alternate course of action that they want to use.
And what we're talking about here to me makes perfect sense in the commercial world. If we're talking about, you know, drone as first responder, or we're talking about law enforcement or even military, where does this technology play, and has that affected your roadmap at all?
So ours is a dual-use technology. We actually our system is currently used by MODs in different parts of the world. So at the end of the day, the challenges are the same. Even in the Defense Department, they need to have common operational picture. They need to have awareness of their aircraft, their drones, non-cooperatives, whose friend, whose foe in the same airspace. And they're not right now. Till now, we were talking about all the friendlies, all the good actors, and us maintaining separation from them. But now, in the defense world, we have bad actors. So we have to track who's friend, who's foe, and are you going to maintain separation for them, or are you going to take a different action?
So I can feed in different sensor data to show me friend, foe, or unknown. We used to call those, right, bogeys and bandits, whereas unknown and affirmed hostile. So, all right. So if we're looking ahead, well, let me ask you a question, because you're on the BV law, the 108 committee. You know, with the work that's being done there, what do you think the time frame might be until something like that's in place?
I'll tell you, based on how quickly we have seen the Part 108 NPRM rollout and stuff. The earlier expectation was by late spring, early summer, we would have the rule. But since it came out again for the e-conspicuity, for the new comments, I'm hopeful, and all indications we see is I think by summer we should have a Part 108 rule.
What does that mean for ANRA in the industry?
I think it's great for everyone. It means now you can scale because any business industry grows when the scale happens. Right now, we are operating like we have under what's called the near-term approval process. We have FAA's approval for strategic conflict detection services, which is what our customers like New York Power Authority, DoorDash, Amazon, the world are using today to do BV loss flights. These are all BV loss flights. But with Part 108, there's the concept of ADSP, like a service provider getting certified, just like we got certified in Europe. We would get certified as a service provider, and then people can start using those services towards their BV loss operation. So what will happen with Part 108 is, I think, and I'm not, in my opinion, I'm not exaggerating when I say floodgates will open, because it'll allow a lot more entities to enter the national airspace system and start looking at commercial operations, BV loss, VV loss as well. But BV loss is where the real business opportunities are. And I think right now we're just talking about delivery operations, a lot of people, because that's what everyone sees. But there's surveillance, there's inspection, there are N number of BV loss use cases that we'll see
Yeah,
coming.
medical transport, food transport, solving food deserts like São Paulo, Brazil, and we just had Speedbird on. And I had another question for you. You know what? It just slipped my brain. That's what happens when you get older, and I've been too much time in an airplane. All right, you know what? If you're looking 2 or 3 years ahead, what do you think some of the biggest challenges are that maybe you're kind of forecasting road, you know, on your roadmap, saying, hey, here's some things that we're going to have to figure out and solve over the next couple of years as all this comes online. And like literally, we scale from 10,000 to a million. Does that make sense? 10,000 drones to a million drones.
I don't think the challenge is technical, because I think over the last decade, we have proven technically that the system is capable of doing this. It's lining it up with expectations. and avoiding the hype. So what hurts this industry and has hurt this industry is the hype curve. So first you have to understand aviation doesn't move like consumer tech. It moves deliberately because safety matters. The exciting part isn't speed, but it is like step by step that we are moving in the right direction. And then if you look at the other part that hurts us, that the challenge per se is avoiding hype timelines, because what has hurt the industry is like we started with drones, but eVTOLs, AM, there was hype, or next year we'll be doing flights, in 6 months we'll be doing flights, and it bumps up the valuation of the companies and IPOs and stuff like that. But it hurts because it is going to take time. So if you're asking me the next couple of years, I see operationalization happening at scale for small drones, but eVTOLs are still a few years further out in terms of operationalization. So us, from your point of view, now peeling the layer back and going to what is needed, we have solved the problem for small drones and integrating them into the national airspace from a technical point of view. Now we have to line it up with the regulation and scale it. Great. But now, as we move to eVTOLs, the same concepts that apply to small drones apply, but there's additional complexity added because a small drone can land anywhere. An eVTOL can't just land anywhere. You have to have vertiports, you need to have charging pads, landing pads available. There are concepts just like in your traditional aircraft, you have slot management sequencing as they come in for landing and stuff. You have to look at things like demand capacity balancing, resourcing service. So these are additional services that are needed to be added on top of if I look in terms of technical roadmap. And we've been doing that. Remember, I told you innovation, experimentation, operationalization. We are operationalizing in small drone space. In eVTOL space, we are experimenting. So we've already have early versions of demand capacity balancing, resourcing service that we are already trialing and testing here in US and Europe under contract with FAA and NASA for different projects in simulation and even rail flights. We even did rail flights like a year and a half back in
What
California
kind of
with some.
flights, Amit?
What's that?
Rail flights?
Yeah, we did rail flights using surrogate eVTOL surrogates to prove the concept of how eVTOLs could get integrated. We took off
Okay.
from an airport in California, entered a UAM corridor, and exited.
Was that with Joby or Archer or a different company?
There were, I'm not sure if I'm at the liberty, but what I'll tell
Oh,
you
fair.
is
Okay.
there were three. Three OEMs involved in
Okay.
that. It involved live flights and it involved simulated flights as well. And these are test flights and as part of a controlled test done by FAA, and we were the airspace management provider for that. We have, and this is public, we have already done eVTOL flights. We are actually the only company that has supported eVTOL flights, live eVTOL flights in or AAM flights in North America and in Europe. We just last month, actually, this is public, so if you Google, you'll find it. In Zaragoza, Spain, we supported eVTOL flights, our system for EHang. They were flying EHang eVTOLs in Zaragoza, and they were managed by our system.
So, as you're looking, if you're looking at the people that you're talking to, that you're selling to the customers, right? I'm guessing it's government, but it's also people that might have a commands,
Enterprise.
right? Enterprises, right? They want to operate a fleet. What like verticals or niches do you think might benefit as you talk about small drone scaling up? Where do you think that growth is going to come from?
This is just my view
Yeah,
of the world, not an analyst view. So
not an
I'll tell you
analyst view,
my
just
view
what you're
is.
seeing, because you kind of have your finger on the pulse of, all these different customers you're talking to, from the military to large companies.
Yeah. So I believe the next few years, the growth is going to come from critical infrastructure, drone delivery, as well as defense and security application. If I was to pick three verticals, those are the top three verticals I would pick.
Yeah. No, that's kind of what we're seeing too, but just I interested in your point of view. So just as we wrap up here, kind of sitting in your seat and you're seeing all those changes and all this growth. Let's just say you and I were getting together for coffee in DC a year from now, and we were getting together and you just come over and you're just high-fiving me. What would have happened over the next 12 months? That you would just be just most excited about.
I would be most excited about, I would probably yell out and say, we have finally gone from interesting technology to becoming critical infrastructure. We are the
Okay.
critical digital infrastructure provider.
What would enable that from interesting to critical?
It's basically scaling. It's all about scaling at this point. It's like we are already scaling in US. So instead of a few thousand flights a day, few hundred thousand flights a day would be ideal. And then for us, because we operate at a global level, we would like to see some of the same scale happening in Europe and Middle East. Like we are deploying our system for managing all the drone eVTOL traffic in UAE, Dubai. So our system, we are contracted by the Dubai Air Navigation System as the sole provider of the airspace management services for drones and eVTOLs in UAE as well. So for a win for us would be we are seeing scale happening in multiple geographies, not just one.
That's fantastic. Well, Amit, as we wrap up here, what final thought would you like to leave with everybody who's been listening?
I'll say that some of us have been in this industry longer than others. And for the people who have hung in there, I'll say just hang in there with the light at the end of the tunnel finally. It's been a slog, but for those of you who are still there, just hang in there. We are getting there finally.
That's awesome. Thank you. And also, everybody listening, just remember, go to hangerxdaily.com. 5 minutes a day. It's the news that you need in context. It's going to be the best use of your time every day, we promise. So, with that, Amit, have a fantastic day. Keep knocking them alive and look forward to having you back on.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.